Well, let me begin by thanking Answer sponsors and our generous hosts, Jack and Alice Carden. They are the ones who inspired those at this church to invite us, Mary Jane and myself, to come here today to speak. Also, honorable mention goes to Rick and Klaus. I even let Klaus persuade me to do a running slideshow. Please don't get distracted. For the past two decades, my partner, Mary Jane, and myself, and I, worked in Nepal, putting needy yet bright children into schools. We've helped more than 1,100 children overall, and currently have more than 600 children in 200 schools and colleges all over Nepal, including villages high in the Himalayas and near inaccessible valleys. We are doing something rather subversive there. We are hoping to peacefully transform a people oppressed by the caste system and by a political system rife with corruption, by producing a new breed of honest, caring leaders from the disadvantaged classes. Gandhi tried this, and he was assassinated. Martin Luther King tried this, and he was assassinated. I'm trying it, but to do it more carefully. A lot of truths reveal themselves in hindsight, so looking back, it is clear that Mary Jane and I never planned to do this, especially on the scale and on the commitment that has ensnared us. It all just sort of happened. However, I am no longer... How did this happen? The Christian argument, I'm sure you're interested in this, the Christian argument that our deeds are dictated by God's will or providence versus our own free will goes all the way back to St. Augustine and maybe before. However, I am not taking sides in that argument. Instead, I have come to realize that there is something else, cosmic or karmic forces, if you will, of one deed leading on into the next deed and on into the next, a sort of ripple effect. And this is what has brought each of us to where we are today and in our lives, and even in the seats you occupy this morning. Just think of all the events in your life that has compelled you to come to church this morning. What if you hadn't moved to Sarasota? How did you ever become UU? Or what if Jack and Alice hadn't been at Evansville UU Church 6 years ago and never sponsored a child? Would we be meeting here today? Believe me, there are forces at work behind our every action. But karma is a funny thing. What I had envisioned to be a transforming experience for the children in their attaining an education has in fact turned out to be an education and a personally transforming experience for Mary Jane and me, and for many sponsoring these children's schooling. As Obi-Wan Kenobi put it, in order to comprehend karma, in order to become a Jedi, you need to feel the force. What is this force we call karma? It's an ancient term from India deriving from the verb root kur, which means to do or to make, as in the cognate, create. Our deeds or actions are not just our own because they impact others. Think of the overwhelming impact that buying a lottery ticket imparts. But even if you don't win, you have contributed to that impact. Remind yourself that the action of paying taxes gives something back in return as well. And the effect could be local, national, or global. In every case, the effect of our karma is not just paid forward, but also received. Now then, and this may also seem counterintuitive, karma includes our non-actions or inactions. Consider how our non-involvement in Syria has led to the formation of ISIS and ISIL and global terrorism even beyond the Middle East. Not voting, not testifying in a criminal case, not installing a smoke alarm, and even Not forwarding that chain letter on to five friends all bear dire consequences. That is what God was telling Moses. Thou shalt not do this, that, or the other. It's bad karma if you do, and good karma if you don't. Either way, it's karma, Mose. Watch out. All actions and non-actions result in the production of karmic forces. In many parts of Asia, karma is seen to influence our future rebirths. Well, who's to say? But just know this, whatever you do or don't do, it is linked to other events. Karma connects all things, it is omnipresent, and it's omnipotent. Karma possesses these very attributes we assign to God. That's the power of karma. Well, as I was saying, as in the sitcom, my name is Earl. How many of you have seen the sitcom, know what I'm speaking of? Oh, you Unitarians are far too intellectual. Get off your pedestals. Okay, I have to explain it to you. Deeds always come back and have an impact on the actor in some totally unanticipated way. That's what makes karma such a funny thing. You can do bad acts and hurt other people, but that will only come back and hurt you as you become more wretched and more despised. What goes around comes around, you see. And how else does a criminal become a hardened criminal? The more he hurts others, the more he hurts himself. And what's the point in that? So Earl, that's the other Earl in the sitcom, is a redneck scallywag. You see why I had to distinguish that. Who has been jilting people all his life. Finally, he has an epiphany when he wins the lottery and in his jubilation runs out in the street and gets run over by a car, loses a ticket, and ends up in a hospital bed. He then relates his tale of woe to the patient in the next bed, who responds to this by saying that it sounded a lot like karma, a totally new concept for Earl. Like Scrooge in the Christmas Carol, Earl then decides to turn a new leaf and right the transgressions against all those he had wronged. He composes a list of over 200 people he has offended. So with each episode, and it went on for 6 years, he sets out to write one of his previous misdeeds, to write one of his previous misdeeds with unintended, unexpected, and hilarious consequences. Because you can't fool karma. If we put it into Christian parlance, I knew you were waiting for that. Giving of yourself is living in harmony with karmic forces and opens us up to receive the blessings of God. I, like Earl and many of you, have come to appreciate that my life is not about me. My life is tightly linked with others. Others are the ones who give meaning to my life. That is the essence of karma. Once we focus on others, especially helping those in need, the ego is overcome, and we gain the love and the warmth of others. The I and the you merge. We become one with them. Recall that song, "Love is something that if you give it away, it just comes back to you." If you want to enrich yourself, don't set yourself apart from others. Give of yourself and give lovingly to receive the blessings of karma in the here and now. Yet this revelation is relatively easy and straightforward, but the realization of its effect often entails a long, long learning process. The best example of giving selflessly comes through our years of parenting. Our child's happiness then makes us happy. And their success becomes our success. Admittedly, I was a slow learner and a so-so one child, single parent. It wasn't until I worked with vulnerable children and families in Nepal that it finally began to take root within me. But don't forget the ripple effect. The training goes one step further until we are treating all children as our own children. Even those invisible to us living on the streets all around us or in the streets of, or in the far-off barrios of Manila. Truly, this realization of helping others as a means to one's self-actualization takes years. I can tell you that I am nowhere near where I'd like to be, but I'm still joyful in my station, and I have a good sense of direction. Not that I don't backslide, but whenever I start focusing on my own frustrations, Mary Jane has a warning to me that she has repeated over and over like a chant. Don't take it so personally, Earl. It's not about you. If I come back with, like the hell it isn't, she quips Elizabethan, Methinkest thou protestest too much. And I then realize I have slipped back into my ego. I have again set myself apart from others. So now that you have thought about karma, let me tell you about our work in Nepal. Have any of you seen that bumper sticker, "My karma just ran over your dogma"? Well, everyone in answer, and not the least of which our sponsors, are doing just that. They're running over dogma. By helping to educate low-caste children in Nepal, we are breaking down a rigid, unauthorized system of state-sanctioned enslavement, the caste system. And despite the long battles that science and religion have waged against each other over the centuries in the West, social dogmas such as caste hierarchies, landlessness, slavery, and child marriages have a much, much longer lifespan. Into the millennia, the Hindu caste system is at least 4,000 or 5,000 years old. Imagine if one of your ancestors was untouchable that far back, all of his descendants, including yourself, would still be regarded as scum. There's no escape from this caste system because it is supported by ignorance, religious dogma, authoritarian practices, and social stagnation of the status quo. But the times, they are changing, and education is today's underground railroad. There are many in India and Nepal of higher caste who have been enlightened through Western education and through the ideals of Gandhi, and they are sympathetic to the idea of equality and civil rights. Many, in fact, are principals of private schools in Nepal who actually want us to enroll our low-caste children into their schools. But it's tricky. We can't enroll too many of these children into any one school without beginning to taint that school, leading to a loss of the elite clientele. In the private schools, children learn English because English is the language of opportunity, as most colleges as well as businesses and professions use English. Even so, our students still face unbelievable obstacles. There are 127 designated languages, not dialects, languages, and ethnic groups in Nepal. Many of them know only their own ethnic language, and so from the beginning they have to learn the national language, Nepali, and English if they're going to a private school. Moreover, they face the stiff competition from their high caste classmates who have educated parents who speak English, have computers and personal libraries in their homes, and electric lights to study by at night. Some of our students need special tutorials after school just to catch up. Just like little Susmita, whose email I read you along with Plato and Goethe. They seem to delight in the extra attention, especially since the school environment is richer, cleaner, and happier than their own homes or on the streets. School is not drudgery to them. It gives them new roots with new friends as a social life begins to unfold for them for the very first time. But there are other impediments. The poor are hungry and malnourished. They come from broken homes with parental abandonment or deaths, and many are days away from a hospital. They are on the razor's edge of contracting a catastrophic illness. So we have a medical fund that have saved many lives and educational investments, too numerous to talk about here. Cancer interventions, open heart surgeries, TB treatments, hepatitis, and on. But there are also natural disasters, from landslides and floods and earthquakes. It's much more likely to take out the homes of the poor that are perilously perched or ramshackled. The April 25th earthquake in Nepal killed only 8,500 people. I say only because The Haiti earthquake 5 years ago, which occurred at 5 p.m. in the afternoon, killed 160,000. Nearly every home of our students within the earthquake zone collapsed because the poor, whose homes are of dried mud and bamboo wattle, or with bricks without reinforced concrete foundations and pillars. That's 300 homes out of our 700 students that sustained massive damage that need to be rebuilt. You can't imagine the despair. In order to forge a new breed of leaders out of these children, we have organized our college students into the Answer Alumni Association, otherwise known as AAA. And within it, there is a tremendous solidarity to work together to reform, rebuild, and serve their homeland. The brain drain is generally regarded as betrayal of their motto, pay it forward. AAA members have been donating blood, doing relief work, and are now rebuilding each other's homes. Now we'll look at it. Today they are building temporary shelters as a monsoon is just weeks away, but soon they will be building earthquake-proof homes called earthbag houses. It is inexpensive, but requires a lot of hard labor of hauling and stacking 60-pound rice bags filled with dirt rather than using tiny bricks and mortar that are that easily crack and shift. So as I focus on the multitude of problems facing our children, most of which can be easily addressed with modest financial resources, I forget about my own trivial worries. My widow's mite is a fortune to them. It seems to me that focusing on the rewards of heaven or fearing the torments of hell is secondary at best. At last, the Pope, who recognizes that serving the needy and selfless giving is indeed the way to salvation. The primary path to salvation is based less on what we believe and more on how we treat each other, our actions, the karma we affect. The Dalai Lama puts it this way: my religion is simply practicing kindness and compassion. So then, what if more of our acts were out of kindness? And then what if they weren't simply random acts of kindness, but directed acts of kindness, like Earl is trying to do in the sitcom? Our organization, Answer, started 15 years ago after we placed a little street girl, Uma, in school and observed her remarkable progress. Our Nepali friends encouraged us to help other children, and after 3 years, I finally consented with a stipulation that the children be the sole benefactors of their sponsor's money, not the organization. As I have put it to our board, if our sponsors are giving, we need to be giving of ourselves. So today, we have just 5 marginally paid staff in Nepal, which are supported by fundraisers and independent donations and from individuals, organizations, and churches. Your offering today will go directly to our earthquake relief fund. Dhanyabad. Our sponsors know that every dollar they give goes directly to their children's education and not towards the administrative costs, such as salaries and overhead, which is always a bottomless pit. We currently have 650 children enrolled in schools all over Nepal, including nearly half of them in college and universities. How remarkable these children is illustrated by the following. To date, over 99% of our high school graduates have passed the foreboding college admission test with A's and B's and gone on to college. Compare this to the national pass rate of 40%, which includes all the C's and D's as well. Don't forget that all our children are from very disadvantaged backgrounds, and most of their parents are illiterate. They have been cherry-picked, if you will, and are often first or second in their class. They have done this on their own against all odds because someone wanted to give them a chance and sponsor them. They write letters and send photos and artwork to their sponsors twice a year, which later evolves into regular emailing and even Facebooking. These children will soon be part of a new middle class and will champion universal and compulsory education, government scholarships to the poor and equal opportunity, and affirmative action in employment and university enrollment. We are indeed forging the fresh leaders for a fledgling democracy still wrought with corruption. As I said, the realization of giving selflessly is a long process. And so from the seventh grade, we are working with them using movies and discussions, speaker presentations and programs and projects and picnics. Along the theme of one of their favorite movies, Pay It Forward, our young people are committed and empowered to sponsor three other ANSWER children during the life of their career. It's a pyramid scheme in which everyone benefits, not just the top. Our graduates have already begun sponsoring kids of their own. Uma, our first child, skipped two grades and graduated with distinction in nursing and is working in a hospital in Nepal while going on for an advanced degree. She was one of the first to pay it forward and begin sponsoring a child. Like Uma, and like Earl in our sitcom, you too have it in your karma, in your ability to act, to make the world a little bit better. If not in Nepal, somewhere. If you are interested in sponsoring a child, come talk with me and Mary Jane and look over our candidates pinned to the display board just outside the sanctuary. It's very simple. All you need to do is write a letter and email it to me. Include the photo and include a photo this week, and you will hear back from him or her around the 4th of July if all goes well. Then, like Earl and hundreds of you Unitarian Universalists, you too will experience the power and the miracle of karma as you both grow together. I can say with certainty that I am a much more caring, a much more loving and giving person today because of these children. Indeed, karma is a funny thing. Namaste.